little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
What are the core skills? Those are, I think, three important assumptions. I'm going to take about another sort of 5, max 10 minutes, and then we're done with the chalk and talk, and we'll get into some practice and start thinking about it. Okay. So anything on there that people are not happy with as key assumptions?
So for the benefit of the listening audience, could somebody just read those out, please?
An informed patient is desirably important to you as a healthcare professional. Engaging patients in treatment decisions where there are real options is a desired goal, and healthcare professionals need to support individuals to achieve this. A patient who is not informed of the possible consequences of these options is not able to determine what is important to them.
And I think, thanks, I think the last one is the one that for me was the biggest learning. So, for example, who has referred anyone to a physiotherapist in the last month? Everyone, yes. Tell me, how do you set about referring someone to a physiotherapist?
I normally just give them the details of the self-referral.
Okay, unless, so you say...
unless it's a particularly complex case and I want to write a letter, but most of the time it's for simple things.
And how will you frame it? How will you set it up with them?
I'd explain to them that I feel physiotherapy may help them, and maybe ask them if they've had the opportunity of having physiotherapy before, and if they're happy to go ahead with it, I would give them a leaflet and explain the process.
So it would normally run something like, I think physiotherapy would be good for you, Ram. Are you okay with that? Yes. Okay, so this is how it happens in my practice. You go, and there we go. Then we've done physio.
Perhaps a little bit more than that. So okay. Explaining about different exercises can be helpful, and explaining a bit more about their condition and okay. And why I think it can be helpful. But it's making me think it's perhaps not as shared as it could be.
Well, what I'm going to drive at is, so who asks them, so you ask them whether they've ever had physio before, no. Who then asks them what you think physios do? So one of the things that happens a lot, and it happens a lot when you're young, although it goes on happening for some people a lot of the time, is that you're quite keen to tell people things. Okay, you do know a lot, probably not as much as Google actually, but what you know in a different way from Google. And you're generally, we are very keen to tell. First rule of shared decision-making, ask. What do you already know? Where are you already on this? Because you suddenly discover that someone's got a PhD in musculoskeletal medicine, or, you know, or actually, no, my, you know, son went to physiotherapist and it was a load of rubbish and I don't know what to go. So explore rather than tell. Almost always, if you can. You're full of stuff, but one piece of information from patients worth any number of your pieces. So the second thing is, I don't know anything about physio. Okay. Would it help if I just told you a little bit about what physio is before you decide whether it's going to be useful to you? So you have to go 5 times. Five times? I can't go 5 times. One would be hard enough to find. I've got to work, you know. Okay, right. So do you know what they do? Well, they put their hands on you and do manipulation and marvelous, lovely things, and I'll get better. No, they don't. They usually, if they examine you at all, examine you once, and then they give you exercises. If you don't do the exercises, you don't get any better. And you have to do the exercise every day. How good are you at doing exercises every day? I don't know. My case, rubbish. I do them for the first 3 days when it's really hurting, and then I forget, or I can't be bothered, or whatever. So I'm not expecting to do all of that, but my point is that if you don't understand the consequence of the option, so one of the options is physio. Actually, physio takes n amount of time, you don't get any hands-on, you have to do all the work yourself, you've got to be quite motivated, get off your ass and all that sort of stuff. Is that for you? Is that going to work? Oh, well, yeah, I think, okay, I'm glad you told me all of that, because I was thinking they were just going to lay on magic hands, but you know, all right, I'm up for that. Or,
so you have to be pretty good at clear and concise explanation.
You do, but I think I'm over egging it. I never do all of that, but I do. Do you know about physio? What do you think it involves? Well, actually, it involves you doing most of the work, and you have to do it quite consistently for quite a time for it to help for most problems. Are you up for that? And at least then they've got a little bit more idea that that's what the option entails. So I think it's a really good example of something that we do every day, and it's incredibly easy to say, well, you know, it sounds like we don't want to go to surgery, and I don't want surgery yet, so, you know, and I can't lose any weight, so, oh, well, physio, okay. Well, oh, phew, hooray, time's up, away you go, physio, hooray, okay, DNA rate 20%, yeah, okay, why? Because we, epidemic of silent misdiagnosis, we didn't really nail that we were on the same page. So I think that for me, what matters to you, what's going to fit, what works. If you just did that every day, 25% of your consultations, let me just check. We've arrived at a decision. Is that right? Is that fitting for you? How are you feeling now? Scary question to ask, of course, because of course, well, doctor, I'm glad you said that, because I'm going to sit down again now and we'll go through it all again.
It can also be difficult sometimes when you get patients who aren't very motivated to do anything themselves. Yeah. They just want you to fix their problem, so you suggest an option, but they'll say, oh no, like for example, CBT or something like that, you want to send them for counselling or whatever, and they'll be like, oh no, I'm not interested in doing all of this. And
so I think that's a really good one. I you know, and you can't do this all the time, but I pushed the boat out. This was an articulate woman who understood a lot about her own problem. She slides into depression. She then starts to drink too much. She starts to eat too much. She starts to withdraw from other folks. And she told me, this is what I do. And I said, so what do you think the options are? And, you know, so we talked a bit about medicine. We talked a bit about therapy. And I said, so, but I'm really wondering, you've got really good insight, and yet I'm sort of wondering, how do you think these other things are going to help? And so she said, what you're really saying is I need to do what I have just told you I need to do, don't I? I said, yeah, I think I'm being a bit tough with you. I think the easiest thing would be to just put you on to some sertraline, okay? And we could both wait for sertraline not to really make the motivational difference. Mm-hmm. And that's the tough thing. A shared decision is not about being liked or about doing anything necessarily. It's about arriving at a place where you at least both understand what might work. Mm-hmm. And for this woman, actually acknowledging that that's what she needs to do and then being supported to do that. And we talked about whether drugs might help her with motivation or energy or whatever. But
so Steve and myself had an interesting shared surgery this morning, and one of the patients that came to see us, a young chap who is largely depressed at the moment, and has a background actually that he'd done at university a psychology course, so knew quite a lot about CBT, and when we raised the options discussion, we started gingerly in the first instance, just asking what he thought that we might be able to offer him. Nothing was coming forward, and then we gave some more specific options. And even when we suggested that maybe the power of positive thought and CBT might be useful for him, and he knew what CBT was, it hadn't really dawned on him that that was a possibility, and the cogs were slowly whirring. And he had to check himself internally before he would say that that would be something that he'd be willing to engage in. So even though people know quite a lot about this sort of stuff, being able to engage in it working mm-hmm. for them is quite a different step, isn't it? And checking that that was right for him was not straightforward, was it?
And we're really keen to do stuff. So lesson number two would be, it's okay to not do, you know, to wait and say, you know, you may want to just let this settle, think about it a bit, make sure this is the right thing for you. I mean, sometimes you do have to, because people are, you know, sometimes agency is so weak or so lacking or so stolen from people that you do need to sort of, in a sense, do that first bit where you're doing most of it and they're not doing much. But you always need to be mindful that the objective is for the patient to be in control and to be making the decisions and making the changes, not for you to be making them for them. You all came into this because you wanted to do something better. I mean, it may have come into it for the money, but foolish if you did. You have to work bloody hard for it. But you do that by helping people help themselves. You know, that about fishermen and fish, and give a person a fish, give a person a fishing rod, all that stuff. Right.
So I was going to say, I also find it interesting. One of the challenging consultations I'm sure everyone has is the sort of depressed patient, because there's so much information to gather, and then when you get to sort of, you know, treatment options, you know, again, takes a lot of information to get through, and then you might be thinking drugs, and then there's so much information you need to give about drugs themselves. And I found it's interesting when I've recently altered the way I do things, and I'll briefly mention drugs as an option, and usually SSRIs is what we give, but I'll tell you what, I'll give you some information mm-hmm. for you to read mm-hmm. about SSRIs, mm-hmm. and then once you've had a read, why don't you give me a call back and see if that's something that you'd want to start on.
Cool.
It's interesting.
Cool.
And now cool. patients who've come back and say, yeah. I've read through it, actually, I don't like the sound of these
yeah.
things. I'd rather go for the
yeah.
psychology.
So, because what's happening is, I'm going to give you magic.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not magic, so I found I'm not going to take it. Versus, I mean, I think doctor's pill is still very important. You know about doctor's pill, Balin. But, and there are some times when you have to use all of your doctor's pill, and that's fine. You're a healer. You're not just a technician. That's why you're not Google. But by the same token, there are times when pretending that there's magic, you know, that someone's just going to get better that way, isn't doing neither of you a service. It may keep you running to time, but it doesn't do either of you a service. So this is an option. There are pros and cons to this. Would it be interesting for you to read a little bit more about it? Very few. I mean, we have a rule in our practice that you should really try not do anything the first time you see someone with a significant mental health problem, except engage and know that you're there with them and you're going to walk the walk with them, be on the journey, but to try not to precipitously refer or prescribe, because lots of change happens simply in the process of narrating a story, and that's cool. But you need to be usually there. You've got to have safety. And for CSA, you've got to do all that other stuff that makes it clear that you've got a backup plan and you've checked for risk and all of those sort of things as well.
Let's hear it for our GP. Skills improving, risk removing, no confusion.